1991. I was in the seventh grade. We had a race riot at my school for a full week. We had a fire drill, and we evacuate. We went out in the yard, and we had to sit there until the fire marshals come in and give us the okay. Well, a huge fight broke out there while we were out there. I came into school on that Monday. Normally you hear the sound of the basketballs and people playing basketball before we get dismissed to go to the home room. Well, this particular day was just quiet. And I go in the room, I'm in the gym. On this side was whites. On this side was colored, right? And it was there. I was reliving what my parents or my dad taught me in those books.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters related to race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tibbett.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. We always like to start out by giving a shout out to our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, where the mission is saving the black family by first saving the black man. That is CodeMMagazines2Ms.com. Check them out.
Definitely check them out. And check out today, we are joined by Eric Pennell and Joe Drew Hundley to have a bold and necessary conversation rooted in their book, 52 Laws of Black Power. A powerful book of self-mastery, financial independence, and building stronger communities. Together, we'll explore their personal journeys, the mindset shifts required for Black empowerment, and how we break generational curses while creating lasting influence for future generations.
Before we get too deep into it, let me give you a little background on these fellas. First of all, Eric Pennell is a creative force blending storytelling, technology, and business strategy to inspire change. As a four-time published author and founder of Automated Consulting Partners, he's passionate about helping people harness automation and innovation to create new opportunities. Co-author of 52 Laws of Black Power, Eric is committed to equipping black individuals with the tools and mindset needed to break barriers, build wealth, and reclaim control over their futures, one practical principle at a time. We also have my brother, Joe Drew Hundley. He brings a deep commitment to advancing equity and empowering black professionals to every space he enters. As a published author, experienced speaker, and seasoned expert in HR and DEIB, Joe has cleared pathways to leadership in 52 Laws of Black Power. He shares invaluable insights on navigating corporate systems, dismantling generational cycles, and uplifting black excellence, both at work and in life. Eric and Joe, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Before we get too deep into it, Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you currently reside and a little about your family background?
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Eric Pennell, live here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Wife, two kids, and fun-loving Frenchie named Leo. So originally from Bluefield, West Virginia.
All right, cool. And then Drew, give us a little bit about where you are currently, your background, and a little bit about your family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, happy to be here. Joe Drew Hundley, more affectionately known as Joe Drew. I'm living right in Metro Detroit, where I've been born and raised. I actually spent most of my adult life in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I met the good brother Eric, and lived about 18 years there before moving back home for work. My wife is a first grade teacher, so she's here to educate the masses. And then I have two sons, 14 and 9, and just loving the opportunity that I have here. Excited to dive into this conversation, brothers.
Well, my brother, we're excited. And look, I'm from the 313 as well. Yeah. So it's exciting to have another brother from Detroit that's on. But more importantly, you brothers, you know, Eric is in North Carolina. But you brothers have really gotten together and put some real strong stuff together with your new book, 52 Laws. So we're going to dive into it. But let me ask you guys this, you know, real quickly, you guys are both busy family men, both have your own business. And then obviously you co-authored this book. Question I have for you, why did you want to come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast to talk about this topic? I'll start with you, Eric.
Yeah, you know, I was surfing around on TikTok. I'm always looking for good content. And my algorithm bumped into the network and looked at a couple clips, really got sucked in, got engaged. And I reached out to Joe and said, hey, man, you got to check this content out. I mean, I think it's something that's congruent for us. So that landed us here after I reached out to you. So glad to be here.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything you want to add to that, Joe?
Yeah, no, like he said, that once he introduced me, now you're in my algorithm as well. And so just to see the content and the focus and the intentionality, especially with uplifting our folks and being able to provide the type of information you all provide, it's unapologetic and it's fierce and it's something that I couldn't wait to be a part of.
Well, brothers, we're so excited. You guys definitely did some research, a searching, and I'm glad the algorithm was friendly with us. You know, sometimes it ain't, right? But it was friendly this time. So you guys ready to jump in and talk about it and have this deep conversation or what?
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about it.
You know what? Every, you know, superhero dynamic has an origin story. So we're going to start with y'all origin story. I'll start with you, Joe Drew. What shaped kind of how you came into this space and influenced you to say, you know what, I have the background, wherewithal, and the patience to author something like this so powerful?
That's a good question. I think a lot of my origin story starts with my good brother, my big brother, Eric here. If I'm being totally transparent, it's not something that I had the foresight to even, you know, think about. You know, Eric and I have connected on multiple levels, from working together to, you know, trying other endeavors together, talking on a regular basis. And he amongst conversation, just asked me if it was something I'd be interested in partnering him with. And so I got to give all props to my good brother that he spoke confidence into me as a multiple published author. I've never published anything. And so, you know, it was something that I was a little concerned about until I heard the topic. And so we started to build and brainstorm, and it was easy from there to know that it was worth the time, worth the dedication and the sacrifice to be able to see the project through.
So as you prescribed this for him, Eric, what was it about your background or when did you realize I have a story to tell or I have some information I want to give? And then how far back, you know, were you digging into your past to kind of bring out this excellence?
Yeah, you mentioned superheroes. I'll have to give props to my superheroes, which is my parents. This goes back to when I was a kid. My dad has a massive Black history collection. Yeah, he made it for me time to go play basketball and watch those Friday, TGI Friday shows. But he made time to pull out those books, and he educated me on the importance of Black history and knowing my history and kind of where I'm going in my life. And my uncle, have a lot of conversation with him about Black history and stuff like that. So I always knew I wanted to do something in this spectrum. It was just a matter of like, when was the right time? It shaped out to be the right time. And I knew who I wanted to do it with. The synergies were just there with Joe for us to really partner, lock arms, and really produce something that I felt I'm really, really proud about.
You know, listen, you know, history is very important, right? And, you know, I had just, spoke at my daughter's high school Black History Month celebration. And, you know, my keynote address was about history and more importantly about, you know, history is like an oak tree, right? That has deep roots that go real, to stand strong. And that's when you know your history, right? So when stuff comes up, you know, when the wind starts blowing really strong, that oak tree stands strong. Right. It doesn't bend over. Versus if you don't know your history, it's like a weeping willow. OK. Mm-hmm. And anything that comes up blows you left and right because you're not standing on anything. Mm-hmm. So, Eric, I'm going to come back to you on this. You know, you were saying your parents, superhero, you know, learned a lot about Black history. Talk a little bit about your first racial experience, my friend, your racial awakening as a young fella. Tell us a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, how did it, when it happened, did you become more hungry to know history? Did your parents start telling you about history? And then you ran into this. Speak to us a little bit about that, my brother.
Yeah, it's an easy one. 1991, I was in the seventh grade. We had a race riot at my school for a full week. We had a fire drill, and we evacuate. We went out in the yard, and we had to sit there until the fire marshals come in and give us the okay. Well, a riot, a big huge fight broke out there while we were out there. I came into school on that Monday. Normally you hear the sound of the basketballs and people playing basketball before we get dismissed to go to the home room. Well, this particular day was just quiet. And I go in the room, I mean, in the gym. On this side was whites. On this side was colored, right? And it was there. I was reliving what my parents or my dad taught me in those books. And, you know, we had situations where my town was really small, so people could, like, actually walk home. You didn't have to necessarily ride the bus. So people got suspended also. As I'm going home on the bus, I'm watching my friends get jumped. And then vice versa. We had segregated lunches, believe it or not. We had dogs, the police walking the hallways. So that was real. I lived that, right?
In 91?
In 91.
91, not 81. Okay.
91. Yeah.
And was your school, just for context, was your school predominantly one color over the other? Was it 50-50? How did that play out?
It wasn't necessarily 50-50. It's more, you know, Bluefield, West Virginia is predominantly white. Okay. But, you know, a lot of people have that misconception that there's no black people living in West Virginia. But I would say, to be honest, I would say 70-30, if you will.
Okay. And it sounds like you held your own. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but to be fair, though, too, so you said 91. I'm trying to think. Hey. You know, Randy Moss is from West Virginia, right? Yeah. And didn't they, I thought, and it could be something different, but I thought it was something similar. Yep. That he ran into in high school. Yeah. I don't know if it was a race riot, but I know something happened.
Yep.
Right? And then set up a bad trajectory in terms of him going to college and, yep. and being labeled a certain troublemaker, if I remember correctly, right?
I know that story very well. They carved the N-word in the desk.
Right.
He got wind of it. I don't know if he was actually involved. They said he was, but somebody got the spleen ruptured, and he had a scholarship to go to Notre Dame.
Correct. Right. Correct.
Lou Holtz called him and said, "Hey, unfortunately, I can't take you, but I know who could." And he called Bobby Bowden, and the rest of history from there.
Wow. So backing up on that, when you went through that, I mean, number one, 91, you kidding me? I mean, it is amazing. Mm-hmm. How did, you know, like you said, half the room was on one side, the other half was on the other side. Mm-hmm. So those history books, those history lessons, all of a sudden you saw, you know, the ghost of Harriet Tubman. And, you know, Frederick Douglass, or maybe not that far back, but, you know, maybe it was Martin Luther King and mm-hmm. you know, and what was going on in Montgomery. So that was a wake-up call for you, huh? How did that make you feel after, buddy?
Well, it was real conflict, right? Because this was in the middle of basketball season. Now, mind you, I've got black teammates and I got white teammates. So guess what decision I had to make, right? That right. conflict, right?
And right.
The practices were interesting. Because this is what we see today. You know, I'm on Facebook. You got people that, whatever their political choice is, these are the same people I went to school with, and I'm seeing choice messages, choice posts that I'm like, oh, I thought we was cool. We were friends. But then you see this. So it was the same thing. So I'm reliving what I'm seeing today, back what I felt back in 91.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
Wow. Joe, what about you, buddy?
Yeah. So a couple years later, I'm a little junior to my brother over there. Just not that many. So 1993, my family moved from the east side of Detroit to a suburb that, Tony, I know you're very familiar with, Farmington Hills.
Yep.
Right on the
what's that say? Affluent suburb.
Affluent suburb. Yeah. Right. My parents worked really hard. I have two younger brothers, and they wanted to take us out of the east side of Detroit now and afford us opportunity to, you know, stay out of some of the trouble that was ahead of us. And moving to Farmington Hill, few miles outside of 8 Mile, for those who use that as their reference point to Detroit. And you know, we moved into a neighborhood where I, if I remember correctly, there was only one other Black family that I knew. And we moved in the summer. Before school started, we started to get a nice yard. My parents still live there to this day. We started to have tire tracks on our yard. And so something about my father, talk about superheroes. My father is still a handyman. So he wanted to create booby traps. So this man took pipes, cement, and pocket knives and stuck them all through the yard. Every morning he had to get up and take them out so no kids would step on them, because he wanted to catch who was driving in our yard. And we had to understand and assume it wasn't happening in anyone else's yard. It wasn't, you know, all the houses are connected. It had to be a reason why people were driving in our yard. And, you know, my father, a Mississippi man, he loved his yard, manicure his yard, still to this day in his 70s, won't let nobody else touch that yard. So this really caused conflict in our family. And so that was probably the beginning of them talking to us about when you're going to probably feel different now that you're going to a school where it's not all Black. That's all I knew, was everyone looked like me growing up in Detroit, one of the blackest cities in America, to now being in this suburb where I walk in, I felt like a fly in a batch of marshmallows. My first experience in sixth grade where I'm absolutely different. It was the first time I ever caught the hard ER. Was sixth grade, first fight I ever got to, sixth grade, in response to being called something that I didn't understand. And then, you know, I just felt the venom coming out this young man's mouth. Right. And so we had to you know, talk about it in a way that I probably wasn't proud of, but I probably was a little bit. So I think that was kind of my first experience, and when my parents really started to help myself and my brothers understand that they made this decision because they thought it was the best decision for our education, just to keep us out of some of the troubles that maybe some of our cousins or other people in our neighborhood got into. But it came with a sacrifice, and there's going to be a little bit of discomfort, which probably turned into a lot of bit of discomfort. I didn't experience the full-fledged riot, if you will, but there were a lot of race-related fights because there were a lot of families starting to move from Detroit, migrating to Oakland County. Farmington Hills. And so I started to build a community of friends. All of us, we Detroit, but, you know, we're living amongst, you know, people who really didn't understand us or always didn't care to accept us.
Right.
You guys at an early age was able to overcome those difficulties as you transitioned and grew and understood better about the world around you. When you got into your adulthood, what barriers did you guys encounter? And then how do you address those or help others with those barriers? Because, I know in the book, that was something that came up as well. So how did you make that shift? Or when did you say, you know what, I'm going to try to control this narrative? And what barrier do you recall making you think about something has to be done here?
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Sure. No, I think for me, the thing that really pops in my head when you mentioned that, when I started to get into one, well, let me start here. Moving and having to understand and adjust and living amongst being a true minority. Like, I know I was a minority in the country, but not every day I see it. It actually taught me to interact better. So by the seventh, eighth grade, some of that stuff started to go away, and I started to immerse myself and understand, because that's all I was around, and we're kids, you know? So we didn't hold on to things the same way I probably hold on today. Today, you don't look at me ever again. We beefing for the rest of our lives. But back then, we got past it, right? And so I think the reason I preface with that is because as I got into corporate world and I started, the biggest barrier was I'm well above average height. I'm 6'6". I played sports, played basketball through college. And then I decided to go into the corporate world and I started to navigate. People looked at me as the big Black basketball player. Didn't expect the articulation, didn't expect the brain and the strategic thought process. And Eric and I worked at the same place at this time. And I started to hear some of those, you know, kind of backhand comments and surprise that I understand English language. Like, I got a degree just like you do. Why are you shocked that I can form a subject and a predicate, you know? So that was really where I started to, you know, get those barriers where people would give me these backhand compliments that I didn't appreciate, because I'm like, that's not a compliment. That's the price of admission to be in the corporate world and be able to excel in what we do and we communicate it for a living. But I because of the experiences I had as a child and growing up as a teenager, I didn't react the way they expected me to.
Right.
And I think that helped me navigate those spaces because I didn't give them the stereotypical angry Black man reaction or flip the table over because I'm this big Black man. I was able to communicate my way through it and give my feedback and express my disappointment in a way that didn't escalate the situation. It's unfortunate. That's what we have to do. We can't get mad like every other human, but it is the reality of the situation, especially being young in my corporate career. So I think for me, that's that lessons learned earlier helped me avoid adding fuel to the fire and making it about my reaction more than my ability to give the feedback that what you're saying right there is, you know, that's the unconscious bias that is so prevalent in today. You know, this is early 2000s, so we weren't doing unconscious bias training. But that's exactly what it was, is these biases coming out.
Yeah, you know, one of the things is easy, you know, if, when you think about it, and it's unfortunate, that's why I want to jump into your book, because of the laws, right? You have 52 laws. Mm-hmm. And, you know, You both talked about a racial awakening, and obviously, no matter how it happens, it's traumatic, right? I mean, but Eric, a riot versus, you know, I had something similar to Joe, but regardless, it's very traumatic, right? Mm-hmm. And to be fair, some people in our community, they don't get past it, okay? And then they carry that, and then they didn't do what you just got finished talking about, Joe, is that they didn't rise to the level of Black excellence. Okay. They unfortunately, you know, took a step back and they stayed in that mindset and they became angry and they didn't really, how should I say, they didn't progress the way they could have, because every human being is talented, right? Everybody's got something they bring to the table. So talk a little bit about, you know, what does, and you kind of spoke a little bit to it a second ago, but I'm going to go to Eric on this. Talk a little bit about what is Black professional excellence? You know, what does that look like? How do Black people, you know, incorporate that? What if they had to close their eyes and they had to see Black, you know, professional excellence? What does it look like, Eric?
Yeah, I think number one, it's accountability for yourself. Reclaiming your power. I think a lot of times we take the helpless approach, like, hey, we need to get something from somebody. It's more about taking that ownership and that power for yourself. So that is knowledge, skills, things that they cannot take away from you. They see you as Black. They may see you as less than or anything else, but it's taking that power and things that they can't take away from you and use it for yourself to empower yourself, but also reach back and help another person.
Got it. Joe, anything you want to add to that, my brother?
No, I love how EP articulated that. I think the only small thing I'll add to it is, you know, it's unapologetic. It's not being afraid to stand up as the authentic version of yourself and still get the same results that those who don't choose to stand up as the authentic self or our counterparts are, you know, achieving in whatever that space is. I can get those same results, if not better, without, you know, without giving away who I am or without sacrificing, you know, the authentic version of who I am, which is a young man raised in Detroit.
That type of strength, though, is not just happenstance and it's not without coordination. And so I don't want us to, you know, be dismissive and just act like you just wake up one day, be like, I'm going to be strong.
Exactly. Go ahead, Chris.
So, you know, you guys have something called learned helplessness. Can you give me a little more of that on the other side of, you know, the strength dynamic?
Yeah. So, well, learned helplessness is where we learn these dynamics of, like, I remember my dad always saying, you got to be two times better, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be two times better. Or, you know, we're taught to be afraid of money. We're taught to be afraid to stay away from risk and things of that nature. But in reality, on the other side of that coin, risk is how we advance and we get beyond that. So we learn these traits and things in our community, our networks, from our aunts, uncles, grandparents. And if we don't course correct those things and say, I understand that was your experience, but we're in 2025 now. You know, we have some tools and some things that we could take advantage of that we don't have to live that experience anymore. And then, of course, again, I'm always going to say my theme is pass it down.
Got it. You know, what's interesting, you know, is that at the end of the day, it's, you know, and I want to get to why did you guys come up with, you know, the 52 laws of Black Power, mm-hmm. right? Where did that come from? And then you spoke a little bit about it right there mm-hmm. in terms of accountability, learn, helplessness. And the reason I want to get to it is because one of the things, you know, and again, I'm just using my, I know Chris and I had chatted about, Chris came out here back around the holidays or before the holidays or after, I think, I can't remember. And we were talking about some generational curses that our community deals with, okay? And at some point, you know, it's up, you have to break that curse. And if you don't break the curse, you're gonna be caught up in it and another talented individual will not progress. They won't reach that Black excellence, right? So talk a little bit about what motivated you guys to write this book, 52 Laws of Black Power, and then talk a little bit about the laws. Like, you know, because when I hear laws, all of a sudden, you know, my hair stands up, okay? But talk a little bit about the motivation in terms of coming up with the book and then applying it to the Black community.
Could I jump in, EP?
Yep.
I think for me, what really just truly resonates the most is it's a conversation. I think as a community, we don't always have conversations and have the right conversations and, you know, be able to talk and disagree and be able to really kind of have that information sharing going, you know, from you know, reciprocal information sharing, if you will. And so I think the motivation for me, you know, upon being tapped on the shoulder by the good brother EP was I want to be a part of a conversation. I want to be a part of creating something like the laws. You may agree, you may not agree. But if you take the time to read them, let's talk about it. Let's have an opportunity to communicate as to what applies to you and what doesn't. But what it's doing in it is forcing us to think about and challenging the things that we may have been told or some of the generational things that we kind of have to break away from and create better understanding for the generations after us. So I wanted to be a part of creating the conversation. I also want to be a part of inspiring the next generation to understand that, you know, you don't have to walk a certain path to be a person who can put your thoughts on paper and share it with others. And I really appreciated that, you know, I'm not a trained author, but I'm a published author, and you can be too with a little discipline, a little opportunity, and probably a good partner. You can be too. And so I think that for me was, you know, the big motivation for this and just creating some empowerment for our people.
Let me ask this question, because this is somewhat antithetical to how I was raised, and y'all might have been raised different. But where I was raised, and it's part of the curse or part of the cycle that you guys were talking about, in the idea of we minded our own business. Mm-hmm. We didn't ask a lot of questions. You know what I'm saying? If something went down, you know, I don't know nothing about nothing. And when it happened, I was out of town. So in the idea of y'all trying to give game to the people that classically have been very reclusive, very secluded, and not being so open to accepting or asking for or inviting this type of prescriptive, you know, medicine, what made you guys say, okay, you know what, regardless if people coming and asking for it, we going to give it and kind of see what happens. How was that a big hurdle, or was that something y'all even contemplated?
Not for me. It wasn't a big hurdle at all. It was about getting the message out there. Just like with anything, you're not going to reach everyone. But I guarantee you there's people out there that they don't know they needed it. But once they get it, it's like a good song, right? Yeah. You don't know you needed that song, but when it hit. Right. And that's what this book is about. And it's a book, but I like to look at it as a tool book. Yeah. It's a guide. I'm envisioning somebody walking to the subway, about to go to work. They got a book bag on, and that thing or that event pops in their head. They pull the book out and they can read about it in the book. It's a guide to get you through those hurdles and those challenges.
You know, one of the things, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to read a little excerpt about the book that you guys put together. It says, the book is more than just a self-help guide. It's a call to action to reevaluate the use of time, resources, and community connections. It inspires readers to harness their personal power to excel in a world often fraught with obstacles while staying true to their cultural identity. Each law is presented as a step towards creating a life of purpose, fulfillment, and empowerment, encouraging readers to lead by example and contribute positively to their community. So number one, it sounds fantastic, all right? Number two, it's, you know, I love that guidebook, right? The Yellow Brick Road to Black Excellence, which is great. Let me throw a couple of curveballs here at you, right? So how did you come up with 52, right? Where, you know, people, you know, read the Bible and they can't remember the Ten Commandments. Okay, so it's going to be tough for them to remember 52. Okay, so number one, how did you come up with that? And then number two, share with the audience, throw us a couple of laws, right? That, you know, that you guys came up with and how the, how, why you came up with them and how they apply.
Yeah, we'll take a first stab at it, Joe.
No, you, yeah, you yeah. Go with it. I got some laws ready to locked and loaded for something.
Okay, that's
so, really yeah, why 50, why 52?
Yeah,
right. So, yeah,
I'm a huge reader. I'm big on learning and courses. So, not affiliated with them at all, but Robert Greene is the author of the 48 Laws of Power. I'm really love that book. Yeah. But I started to think to myself, that's not really reflective of us. I need something for us. And to be honest with you, the number 52, I was listening to, I know you see got the Baltimore Ravens helmet back there.
Sure, absolutely.
I was listening to Ray Lewis one day while I was thinking about, I was listening to one of his motivational talks. I listened to something every morning and he happened to be the one that popped up and that number 52 came up. So that's where they backed into the number 52, and I fit the laws. Joe and I fit the laws to go into that.
Okay, well, throw a couple of laws at us, though, man. I want to give us some laws.
So it's very much appropriate for today. Law one, and we actually just did a podcast on law one. Never place all your trust in the government. And I think it's extremely important and appropriate that we ensure that we let our people know, like, coming out of a Democratic presidency, I think, you know, there's a larger percentage of Black people who do vote, who may vote Democratic. Even when it was the good brother Obama in the office, I think this law is very important to say, like, we still have to understand you can't put all your trust in the government. The government is a system, and it's a system designed for the system, not for you. And so that particular law, I think, reigns true, and we had to speak on it, especially as we're starting to see so much impact in our country from the new administration and all the different things that they're trying to accomplish and the executive orders and so on and so forth. So that particular law was, I think, was extremely important. Going just down the line, we also did a podcast on Law 6, and Law 6 was be a great example for those coming behind you. So we just talked about this earlier in the show, and just around giving game to the future generation. I think that's a law. It is absolutely incumbent upon us to ensure that we are being a great example and we're lifting and pulling the generation behind us. If not, all the work that we're doing is all for naught. And I think our ancestors, the generations before us, you know, absolutely, you know, stood and allowed us to stand on their backs and improve and be better. And so we have to do that, especially with the access to information that we all have. And if I could throw a third one at you, actually, this is going to be the next podcast that we're doing. And it's just around being unapologetically Black and being true to ourselves. I think, you know, coming out of Black History Month that still exists for anybody questioning, I'm not afraid to stand strong and let you know that there's power in being Black, and I'm proud of it. And that's, I believe that's an important law. I think all too often as we're starting to, you know, there's gray areas there, and people are getting all types of success. Sometimes people forget that it is important to be unapologetically about being Black and being strong and standing up and understanding our history made us who we are today, and not being afraid to live in that and walk in that power.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, buddy. Let me ask you this, you know, I love to get some of the feedback you're getting from the Black community on this, right? You know, Chris kind of went to it a little bit. I'm gonna go a little bit deeper with it, right? When he said, you know, typically we private and this and that. But, you know, when I was coming up in school, you know, brothers, unfortunately, when they tried to pass knowledge, especially knowledge outside of the community. So in other words, not knowledge just in your neighborhood, but to the stuff you were talking about, Black excellence, holding yourself accountable, all those type things, there would be a tremendous amount of pushback, right? Oh, now you think you somebody. All right, how you come and telling me what I should do? You trying to be like the white man? You know, all this type of venom that would come out, right, when you're just trying to help educate your community. So I would love to hear some of the feedback that you guys get as you guys start talking about these laws.
I think largely it's positive. I think Joe and I, we've got content out there. We share videos. So to be honest, it hasn't been anybody directly that pulled me aside and said, hey, you know, good or bad in terms of bad feedback, particularly bad feedback. But I see comments that are out there on some of the videos and some of the content, right? And it goes to line what you just said, you know, why do you guys want to talk about health? You know, they feel like we're fat shaming. There's a portion in there with the law about being healthy, you know what I'm saying? And talking about the Black community, which we all know to be true. But there's a certain things there. Finances. I've gotten some feedback about who made y'all financial advisors and stuff like that, you know? So there's some negative out there, but again, I stand firm of being unapologetic about putting this book out there. Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, outside of what you just shared, I find some of it kind of comical. I think the law, you know, most of the feedback I've heard is all positive. But right. I think one of the more negative is not even the right word, because it still gets to the goal of creating conversation. But it's like, you know, law feels matter of fact. Right. Is you're saying that it is what it is. It's black, it's white, and there's no gray area there. And I think it allows for us to dive deeper into that conversation around this is our opinion. You know, these are two brothers who put our brains together and put an opinion. If you have a difference of opinion, great. That challenges you to think about that and form your own thoughts and form your own opinions. I don't think that either one of us are naive enough to think that everybody's going to agree with every single piece of information in this book. But if it creates a conversation and allows us to talk through it and share our perspectives and maybe agree to disagree, then I think that we've reached success, you know, beyond our wildest dreams. And that's what the purpose of the book is.
Let me ask you a question, and I don't want to disparage any of the laws, and if they're listed in order or if they're randomly selected or whatever the case may be, but is there one that resonates with each of you independently more than any other? Not to, I'm asking you that for your ugliest child, you know what I mean? Like, but is there anyone that resonates with you, EP, that you say, you know what, that I had to get that one in there.
How to overcome the good old boy network. Okay. My wife is from Jamaica. Okay. So naturally for her, she didn't live the experience of the things we went through as raised up young Black men. It wasn't until like she got into the corporate walls and she kept telling me stories about certain things that I had to enlighten her, like, you understand why that's happening. Mm-hmm. And that's now her favorite law as well. Now she reads about the good old boy network. She gets it. It's that light bulb that goes off. So that one is very strong because you have the water cooler conversations, how to get in the clubhouse. Absolutely. And if you don't know how to navigate that and network your way up and find a way to get your foot in the door, think about how I reached out to Tony through TikTok. A lot of times that TikTok is going to go unanswered if you reach out to the other side. They're not trying to extend that olive branch.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
So that's why that resonates with me.
And yeah. For you, Joe Drew.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's Law 14. It's overcome the racial imposter syndrome. Mm. okay. as somebody who found myself thrust into this corporate life and this corporate experience. And I progressed pretty quickly, especially in this leadership aspect where I was always the only one. I had to fight through this imposter syndrome of like, do I belong here? You know, like I say how I can stand unapologetically. That was a journey. I had to get there. And when I first started that, I didn't have the confidence that I probably should have had and didn't have the confidence that my parents spoken to me because I was just in these spaces where I'm like, I don't think I belong here. And they're gonna find out that I don't belong here. And as I grew and learned that the things I was prepared for as a young Black man was well beyond my peers. And not only, you know, maybe they didn't belong in the room with me, probably was the actual thing, because there was just a level of emotional intelligence, a level of creativity and diversity in my thought process and ability to adjust that others didn't come with. But I had to get past that just imposter syndrome of I'm in this white space with my Black body and my Black brain, and I don't know if I belong here.
Right. Let me ask y'all both a question real quick. In the concept of us kind of going along to get along and code switching, right? There's a threshold to where you can't be overtly unapologetically Black. Like you can't come into the spot with the Hakeem coming to America dashiki on, and even though this is formal and where you from, so how do you navigate and calibrate how much of your heritage and how much of your Blackness you bring into spaces that aren't prepared for all your glory?
Yeah. So I look at it as two levels for us, particularly us as Black men, you know, Black women too. Right. There's everybody in this world has to find their voice. You got to find your voice. But then we also have to find our voice, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And, you know, you to your point, you know, you want to come out and sound professional, but at the same time, you know, if you're not careful, you know, those your octaves and your voice, your inflections can be too high and too low, depending on how you're trying to code switch, as we want to say. Mm-hmm. But you got to find your voice as your base level. But then you have to find your voice, your Black voice.
Right,
you got to find that voice.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, let me, you know, one of the things is, so what I'm hearing is that, and it's in the description, this is more of a guide in terms of how, you know, African-American people can look at these things and have, you know, some antidotes, how to deal with certain real life situations that they may, as they navigate the earth. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things, though, I want to get you guys' take on this, because as Black people, we come with a lot of baggage. OK, you know, especially when you talked about early, Eric, when you talk about history. Right. You know, there's a lot of baggage, you know, generational trauma that we deal with. OK, that's part of, you know, generational curses as well. Right. That keeps people in certain areas that don't grow. So how, if somebody's dealing with that, and they may not even know, but they want to get out, they want to strive for the best, they want to, you know, change the trajectory on their life, and they got your book, but then they're dealing with this, you know, this mindset of what's been, they're carrying this baggage. How do they get past that?
Want to start, Joe?
Yeah, I mean that's a million-dollar question right there. I think a lot of therapists are making a lot of money trying to help people answer that question. And I think for me personally, my thoughts is first things first. You have to kind of find a reckoning within yourself, and you have to want to get past it. And so I think it's important to note that the book is only words if you don't want to embrace
Correct.
It.
Correct.
And so it comes with that want to, first and foremost. And then I think it's around giving yourself grace and understanding that journey is not an accelerated journey, and it's not linear.
It's not linear.
We're going to take a couple steps forward, a couple steps back, and you got to be comfortable in that. And you have to give yourself grace to understand that Those traumas are strong. Mm-hmm. Those traumas are strong. You're talking, just the concept of generational trauma, I mean, it took a long time to get there, right? And so because it's so strong, you're not going to just break it just because you read a couple chapters in the book that a couple brothers put together. You know, it's going to take kind of a consistency And you also have to kind of define what you want to get out of it and, you know, have that inner dialogue.
Let me ask you guys this. Is the laws, are they packed together? So in other words, are there laws all over the place? You know, like you said, be accountable. And then the next law is, you know, how to deal with the good old boys network. Or are they in a certain section of steps, right? From mindset, accountability, get up every day and blah. So talk a little bit about that, Eric.
That may be volume two. I think that's a great idea. But to your point, I think it's more of we just went through flow through the laws.
Got it. So you just came up with stuff right as it came up.
And your first time getting the book, it may be that you read law 1 through 52. But when you go through it the second time, that's when the toolbox and the guide kicks in, right? You're gonna encounter these things. And you're going to pull that book out because you're not going to remember everything you said about the Ten Commandments. You're not going to remember everything, but it is designed for you to go back and revert back to it and pull out of.
So let me ask you guys, and just to kind of put a pin in the idea of the message or what you want to resonate with the book beyond just starting conversations, what would be best case scenario for you guys to hear as far as feedback from the book from a young impressionable brother or somebody who said, you know what, this is what I was looking for and this was the right time for it. Is there a story or something that you've heard thus far that have made you say, wow, it was all worth it, beside it being self-therapeutic?
Best feedback I've gotten was my dad.
Okay,
where he taught me the way to get here, but then I was able to write something in my book and challenge his way of thinking and to look at something a different way. Kind of those risk factors I talked about. You know, my dad, he grew up right in the heart. I went through a race riot, but my dad grew up in it. That was his childhood, right? And to be able to challenge some of those things of where we are today, you know, that trauma that he went through, it still carries through, and he's 70 years old today, right? Mm-hmm. I was able to kind of write something and challenge a different way of looking at it about how we're able to get and navigate these rooms. Because for him, it's like, hey, you know, you live in one of the racist places in the world down there in North Carolina, you know what I mean? But I'm like, Dad, you in West Virginia. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things where I'm able to reach back and teach him a thing. That was enlightening for me.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Joe Drew. Do you feel like if I hadn't spoken with you guys and I just picked it up, is the book regional or national for Black folks?
Oh, I think it's national. Okay. I think it's probably more national than global. Not all, you know, brown folks, Black folks, maybe connect to some of the things that, you know, directly come from the system that's America. But I definitely don't believe that there's a regional aspect or feel. My work, my travels have afforded me opportunities to meet brothers from all over this country. And I can hear and feel stories, you know, from me playing basketball throughout college and some of the experiences I heard from teammates who are from all over to, you know, kind of getting into this corporate world. And I moved away from home. So I was immersed and went to HBCU, people from all over the place. So I feel like this is something that'll resonate no matter, you know, what corner of this country that you're in. And I would like to believe that future iterations could even go beyond, you know, this country.
You know, I got two questions for you guys. Number one, I'm so impressed that you guys put this together. Okay. And more importantly, your love for your brother and sister, for your fellow human being, that you guys invested the time and became very thoughtful to put something together that people could actually look at and hope and use as a guide to educate themselves, to advance themselves. So I think that is great. So my first question is there one law that you believe, all 52, if there was one law that you guys believe that every person who read it should master this first law, what would it be?
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I want to hear your answer first, brother. I don't know if that's a good one.
That's a good one. I think the one Joe said was the unapologetic Black, 14? being unapologetic, right?
That's accountability, accountability, right? Be accountable.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Yeah, so you saying the unapologetically black and, yeah. and you know just basically standing in confidence. So yeah, that was 14.
Yeah, it's 14. Yeah. But once again, just to be on the side of the people now, that ain't an easy pill to swallow.
No,
you need some lubricant.
Yeah.
Because if I was starting off and I needed to build up to something, what is my stepping stone? What is my
What's
tricycle?
The number one law this? You know what? If you can't do nothing else, if you did this law, this would set you, I would say it would set you free.
Right.
Okay. The shackles come off and then you can start doing the other ones. What's the one law?
Law seven, learn how the wealthy value their money. I think in this capitalist in this capitalistic world that we're in, there are so many lessons, even from people who we probably don't necessarily care for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are some lessons in how they value their money, how they treat their money, how you know they've grown their money, how they make their money work for them. They're so we met in the finance industry where we were getting licensed to help people understand investments. Mm-hmm. It changed the trajectory. I can speak for my brother over there. It changed the trajectory of how we then communicate it with our families and how we raised our families as we begin to start families as well. Mm-hmm. I think that is so important. If you live in this country, you got to understand money and how to value it.
Yeah. Especially in a capitalist society, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let me ask one of the questions as we come, you know, wind this thing down. If I saw it, if I didn't know y'all from Adam and seen you at Whole Foods, would I be able to see Black power being emphasized or accentuated? How is it a personal journey? Like religion, right? Religion is a personal inner spiritual relationship that you have with whoever you worship. Is it a situation where I get mad? Like my brother-in-law, right? My brother-in-law buy some cologne, spend $100, $200 on it. And if four people don't compliment it, that junk was trash. You liked it when you smelled it, though, cuz. Like, well, why is
he spent a couple hundred dollars on it.
But it's, you know what I mean?
Right.
So how do you evaluate or rationalize Black power or accentuating the 52 laws? Is it a personal spirit? Is it a journey within?
It's a journey within for me. And I would say speak for Joe as well, too, right? I mean, it's one of those, I'm very aware when I'm out in public and how people are perceiving you, right?
Yeah.
We're perceived a certain way and all this good stuff. So for me, I want to be set the example that you, like, for instance, and I'm not afraid to talk about this, my wife, on the Jamaican side, they're not too fond of Black people sometimes, right? And she was afraid that her family talking like that in front of me was going to offend me. And I clearly said to her, I was like, they ain't talking about me. Right. Like, that's not their experience. Like, you go look up my name. I got on my resume what I do. So they're not talking about me, the traditional, what they say, Black American. They're not talking about me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that's a whole nother podcast, too,
it
right?
Sure is.
Because, you know, we, as a matter of fact, I got to put that down as a topic.
The Melting Pot Podcast.
Right.
Yeah, right.
The Melting Pot Pod. That's
let me ask you guys this, though, right? And then we're going to get final thoughts. What's the overall goal here? You know, for the 52 laws, what are you guys trying to accomplish? And then 5-10 years from now, what does it look like? Yeah. Joe, I'll start with you.
For sure. I think, you know, be able to get in spaces like this and be able to, you know, not only create our own content, but enhance others who are trying to continue to grow these amazing platforms to be thought-provoking piece of content that people seek after and want to connect to. I think I share this with Eric all the time. This is like a something that we're manifesting is, I believe this is a curriculum. Mm-hmm. I believe that a professor can take this into African-American studies or something similar and be able to challenge their students to get through these and be able to use that as opportunities to create research and create, you know, spaces for those they're college students, they're not children anymore, but these young adults to be able to challenge one another and have these conversations and go deeper than maybe the traditional things that you're taught when you talk about African-American studies or any type of those types of courses. So I think that to me feels like a obtainable, but a stretch type of goal that, you know, we believe that this book can get to where, you know, we're helping to support the evolution of thought process to those behind us and living by that law six that we talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. If I can chime in, it's definitely an ongoing conversation. We have a segment we're going to be talking about. Would you call it a crucial conversation, Joe? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
So I have a forum where we're bringing people in. So Chris, you asked about feedback we got from other people. We're going to have forums bringing people in. I also think there's a segment there where we can reach people earlier. This is not just a adult education type book. This is one where we can start early and reach out to young men, young girls at an early age so that we can catch them there, and it makes it easier transition to our adulthood.
Yeah. Community conversations, by the way. The author of Crucial Conversations, don't come for us. Community conversations.
There you go.
We're working through with 52 laws.
So listen, my brothers, we really appreciate you guys being here. Final thoughts. You know, Eric, I'll circle back with you. Give me your final thoughts. What do you want to leave the audience, my man?
I think the most important thing that, you know, where we are today with the government, the new regime that's in the office, I think it's even more important now than ever that you've got to assert your power. You know, pushing sin on social media, arguing back and forth about political parties and stuff like that, that's not activism. It's time to get active by being active, giving the book, sharpen your knowledge, sharpen your skills, and reclaim your power.
Love it. Love it. Joe.
That's beautiful, EP. I second what the good brother said. And I think in addition to that, I think I just want to impress upon though anyone who's, you know, within earshot of this content that the power is within, and it takes your opportunity to challenge yourself, to put yourself in uncomfortable spaces and uncomfortable times. It's a sacrifice. You know, at this time where so challenging, everybody is having a hard time. It's very easy to, you know, kind of rest on your laurels or sit back and be woe is me and pour yourself a drink and, you know, do whatever else your vices are. But you got to challenge yourself to break away from that and be able to enhance your thought process and bring others into the conversation. And so I got to impress upon the masses that opportunities are there. And, you know, I think 52 Laws of Black Power is one of those opportunities that can help you kind of invest in yourself and find your own lane.
All right. Well, we definitely enjoyed learning more about you two brothers and about the book, 52 Laws of Black Power. Definitely take a chance to go out and take a look at it, folks, and let us know. Add to that feedback loop that they're looking for. And they can reach you guys on, is there a website or anything yet, or is a Facebook page, or where can they actually reach you to give you that feedback that you're looking for?
Yep. There's a website, 52 Laws of Black Power. It's the website.com.
Okay.
We're on Instagram at 52. Is it the 52 Laws of Black Power? Yeah.
Yeah. The 52 Laws of Black Power.
Yep.
All right. That's cool. And 52 is the number, right?
52. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Shout out to Ray. We got to get Ray a book, man. Yeah.
So we definitely want to thank you, Eric, you, Joe, for coming in, sharing this with us. It's definitely been enlightening, and we got to keep doing things like this and keep promoting each other and big up in the culture. So
thank you.
Guys. Absolutely. Yeah. So stay right there, my brothers. I think it's now time for
Tony's Tidbit.
So the tidbit today, breaking generational curses begins when we rewrite the stories we tell ourselves about who we are and what we deserve. Because true freedom comes when we shatter the cycle of learned helplessness and step fully into our power. And you heard a lot of that from our brothers, JD and EP, from the book 52, the co-authors of the book 52 Laws of Black Power.
So we definitely want to make sure that we don't get out of here without reminding you to tune into Need to Know with Nasinga. Don't miss this week's Need to Know, the segment by Dr. Nasinga Burton on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, where Dr. Burton dives into timely and crucial topics that shape our community and the world. Tune in. She gives you a lot of different kind of power as well. Very, very passionate, educated, articulate woman, and definitely something you don't want to miss.
Absolutely. And don't miss our next episode coming out next week. Pull up, speak up. Where we talk bold, unfiltered voices, tackle the most provocative issues. Our roundtable provides their sharp perspectives, real talk, call to action. Definitely you want to tune in and join the revolution.
So we always would be remiss if we did not dial this back to our call to action. You know, we want to make sure that we're always incorporating less, L-E-S-S. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking everyone to embrace L-E-S-S. The L stands for learn. Educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances to ensure that you can pass that down to generations and spread that throughout your community.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned, and especially incorporated the 52 laws, now you can put yourself in the other person's shoes, because now you see exactly what they've been going through.
And then the first S is for share. You know, share your insights and enlighten others. Don't hide it, divide it. The only way we grow is to grow collectively. You know, no man is an island. We want to make sure we're sharing this game and giving it wherever we can.
Absolutely. And the final S is for stop. We want to actively, and as my brother Eric said, we want to actively be an activist. So you want to actively stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Auntie Jenny or Uncle Joe says something at the Sunday dinner table that's inappropriate, you say, Auntie Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that, we don't say it, and you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, will build a more fair, more understanding world. And more importantly, we all will be able to see the change that we want to see, because less will become more.
We encourage you to tune in to the previous episodes and future episodes that we will have. Make sure you go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, leave us reviews, subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast. Tony, where can they find us?
My friend, they can find the Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And you can follow us on all our socials of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guests, the co-authors of 52 Laws of Black Power, Eric Pennell, Joe Drew Hunley. For the co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We added a couple of laws about it today as well. We love you, and we're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.